In this episode, I have my man Stephen Hitt, the founder of Industrious, a growing franchise model that I have been following. Go back and check out the long format Shoot the Shit that I recorded on site at one of their Seattle locations and all the podcasts I've done with Stephen prior. Industrious is such an interesting franchise model because it takes the best of what CrossFit style barbell based group strength and conditioning does and puts it in a condensed high operational capacity format. They have created a HALO system, which is their word for an in-place model, a 169 square foot in-place spot for each member. They have their own squat rack, their pull-up bars, ergs, plyo boxes, barbells, kettlebells, dumbbells, everything you need for a great functional fitness workout in place. That means no wasted square footage, which means more profit and revenue for the gym. If you are interested in franchising an Industrious, grab the link in the show notes below or head over to the link in my Instagram bio and hit me up and I will personally connect you with the Industrious franchise team. I hope you guys enjoy the conversation.
What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. Back on it, I've got my man, Stephen Hitt, hailing from Seattle. And if anyone has seen the long form Shoot the Shit that I did with Stephen when I went out and got to see his corporately owned locations out there in Seattle of Industrious. And then you've been on the podcast prior to talk about Industrious, what it is, how it came about. But I kind of want to pick up from where we left off on there is, you know, when I left Seattle after visiting you, which was just an awesome trip, man. It was so much fun. You know, franchise, you guys were just in the middle of breaking out into your immediate market that you know very well, which is Seattle. And you had coaches and people in a lot of high interest because that's where your corporately owned stores are. Since then, you guys are now knocking on the door. You've broken out of the Seattle market now, and you've got, you know, some pretty good leads and insights on some other interested parties to take you guys outside of that market into different, completely unknown regions. How does that help you sleep at night?
It's got, we'll say in terms of sleep, it's got its ups and its downs. I think that its downs are that you don't really sleep very much at this point because there's always just too much work to do, and there's a lot riding on it, you know, for a lot of people. And so you're just always working. And even when you're resting, you feel like you should be working. But what's comforting is Industrious is growing, and its awareness is, you know, is expanding, and people are getting more and more familiar with the brand and what we do and how we do it, and it's connecting. And, you know, when you came out in April, we had two franchises sold, both to our former employees. You know, they both are franchise owners now. And since then, we've brought on five more franchisees, and one of them is out of state. They're in Texas. And ironically enough, the one in Texas was the first one to officially open. They beat the first one to open in Seattle by about 48 hours to the opening finish.
They're a little less, I feel like in Texas, it's a little more liberal with permitting and things like that maybe than it is in Seattle and out West.
Yeah, totally. Well, the funny thing is that they're actually a former, you know, traditional CrossFit gym model operating in about 3,500 square feet. And they switched over to our model, and they were able to do it pretty quick because it was basically, you know, the gym version of, you know, flip my house or extreme home makeover.
Yeah. Which is challenging. I've had the privilege of working with a lot of Sean Pastuch's people who are opening up his version, his brick and mortar version. It's not franchise level. It's going to be more license level, but still they're taking a CrossFit and retrofitting it very similar to what you did, which is nice because you have a blueprint for that. I'd love to dial in on whenever I get a chance to talk and work with an emerging franchise. We generally look at, like, there's three big problems that an emerging franchise has. Number one, an emerging franchise still generally owns a corporately owned shop, if not a couple. So you still have your own store to keep track of for when shit goes down, just like any gym owner who's listening to this today. Number two, you are now, as you're emerging, you're really focusing on that brand awareness. And after you get through the first round of however many franchises will be friends and family and former customers, right? Like that first raise, like when someone's trying to raise money, they go to that first ring of friends and family. Now you're getting out to where someone happened to be on LinkedIn, happened to see a video, happened to go to the website and hit you up. And eventually, like, yeah, I also own three Froyos or a Massage Envy or whatever it is. And you're like, oh, this guy's an experienced franchisee. Shit, I gotta make sure my thing is buttoned up because I'm still young in this game. So you have like this brand awareness going out and you're dealing with younger, more naive franchisees, first-time franchisees, and you might get some in here that's what they do. And they're going to hold you maybe to the same standard that they hold Jersey Mike subs to, you know, because they franchise me. So now you're like, oh shit, I got to come correct and make sure this thing can stand up. And it looks, you know, it doesn't look like I put it together overnight kind of scenario. And then the third thing, you got to be picky. Because in the beginning, when you start selling that franchise, just like any gym owner, when they first open it up, everyone's money's green. But like protecting the brand and who you allow to carry the flag, it's super enticing to sell a franchise to someone. But you do the due diligence and you've seen all the stuff going down with Exponential and all that stuff. So it's like you really got to, fuck, I want to grow this thing, but I don't think he or she might be the best fit. And that sometimes can be a hard thing to say no to. Because everyone's looking at you like, okay, Mr. Guy, you said you're going to franchise. Let's see you fucking do it. And you're like, I don't know. I haven't grown any because these last couple ones, I didn't think were a good fit. Talk to me. I mean, am I hitting on those pieces? That sound accurate at all?
Yeah. And I think that what's really cool is, you know, we started this process in September of 2021. You know, that's when we decided we are going into franchising and let's get to work and let's figure out how to do it. And, you know, here we are and it's 2024. So we're coming up on the 3-year mark. So we're about 2.5 years into this venture. And we have experience now opening up a new facility with somebody that's on our staff. And we have experience in, you know, in selling Industrious as a brand and in selling, you know, franchises, you know, that was all stuff that was uncharted territory for us. You know, we didn't even know what an FDD was when we started the process. And so, you know, we've come a long way in that regard. And you're right. Now, what's starting to occur is that it's becoming known. It's obviously new. It's extremely attractive because it does hit the center of the universe for what a lot of people are looking for in terms of a group fitness, you know, experience, and then also effectiveness of programming and sustainability of being able to go in there every day and work hard. And so it you know, it's starting to get people's attention. And, you know, now we know, we're 2.5 years in. It's like, you know, when you take a new big job, right. And you're 2.5 years into the journey, and that's when you can just start to really, really, you know, establish your confidence and feel good about, you know, who you are and what your identity is. That's sort of where we're at in the journey. And, you know, my hope is that what we're able to do now is because of our experience to this point, is we're able to be ready for the people that we don't know, that, you know, maybe a little bit more institutional and in, you know, experienced franchise operators and have different franchise brands. And our hope is that, you know, we've gotten to this point and we're uniquely positioned for that. But the reality is that there's stuff to learn there. And, you know, and it's weird, you know, when you've got 10 sold, which is basically where we're at. We have 7 franchisees in. There's 2 more that are coming online in different states. You know, Oregon and Arizona look like they're going to be the next ones to go. And so, you know, we're at 10, but we're still a small company because there's only 10 franchises sold. There's 4 open, 4 locations open, and we've got, you know, the rest of them in development. And so it's, you know, so you've only got so much bandwidth. And, you know, so taking on somebody that is, you know, that we don't really know very well, even if they're super experienced, to your point, you know, we don't have the bandwidth to be like, oh, you're just anybody and you got $35,000. So let's go to work. No way. It's too much work. It's not worth the $35,000. And so it needs to happen, at a tempo that our ecosystem can currently support. And so it's weird. I think that we're sort of in this self-selecting phase. Early on, it's like, we just got to get traction, right? I dropped something. It's like, we just got to get traction. We got to, bring people in. Thankfully, most of our early franchisees are current and former employees of Industrious. So they understand us very well. And that's been super helpful. So we could move very quickly there. But people that don't know Industrious, it's not going to be just like, oh, you're on the phone and you want to develop a market. We know that there's only so many markets that are available. And we got to make sure that we're putting the right operators and the right owners in those markets.
And this is something you and me were discussing prior, and we'll discuss more, but it's also going in and understanding what is market, what's your market cap or on saturating it. You could go with like an Industrious in a Charlotte, North Carolina, you could likely support probably two based on our pod. We have less than 1 million people. And what we see, especially coast to coast, is in any population, 15% are fitness membership holding. So we have 1 million people, that's 150,000. So you look at 150,000 and you think of all the people who have market share. And I think Industrious, I'm like, okay, I think Charlotte could probably support two locations, right? And then, you get maybe two in there and you kind of like Metabolic, they just opened their third. They just opened the third location. And I didn't think Charlotte could support a third. And it's doing very well. And it's like, so, you kind of look at a market, but you don't want to oversell a market, right? And the first franchisee in, let's just say Charlotte, for example, he might want rights to the entire area, which you guys have your protocols for that, what you have to do to secure an entire market. But you don't want to go the way of F45 and oversell a market. But it's crazy because each market, it's not based on population either. It's not just that easy back of the napkin math I just did. 15% of the population, it's so much more than that. Because every market is a different culture, right? Like every market is different seasonalities, right? You go to Bozeman, Montana, it would be, you'd be looking at that. They'd be tough, probably get more than one in there because 5-6 months out of the year, people are outside mountain biking or skiing or doing whatever. They don't want to be in the gym. Right. So like, you got to take that into consideration. Has there been any markets that someone suggested to you and you said, no? Like based on my research or my gut or this, that, or the other thing, I don't think we should open one there.
Yeah. There's been a couple of leads that have come in that we've talked to that have been in real small towns. And we just said, no. Industrious does well, in places where, it doesn't have to be a tier one market, like a Seattle or New York or Chicago or LA or one of those, but we do well in markets that are exciting markets that people, want to go to. And it's not that we wouldn't open up in a small town somewhere. I come from a small town. I'm a small town boy myself. And I grew up in Springfield, Oregon. And I love them. But, there's at this point, there's only so much time that we have. The opportunity costs of opening one in a small market are just too high versus us going to a market that can really, pay dividends and set the franchisee up for more success earlier. And so it is tricky, right? Because you want to say yes, especially to the right people. But there's another part of you that's like, at this point, it's not a good, I'm a big believer in environments in order for sort of the triangle of success to be, to work out, it needs to be a great operator. It needs to be, great customer base, and it needs to be a great environment. And it's not just one or the other. It's that triangle that has to be there. It's sort of the leadership triangle.
Talk to me about another challenge I imagine you're going to be encountering is right now for you to bop around to your different franchisees locally for you, not too big of a deal. You get in that awesome Sprinter van you have and you go for a drive and you know, maybe an hour or so at the most. I don't know what the distance is, but okay, now we're talking Texas, potentially Scottsdale, potentially. I mean, you know, I vicariously, you know, through my buddy Brandon Cullen, I mean, the dude's on a, you know, I thought I had a lot of legs. I did 30 some flights the one year, and I was like, you know, oh man, look how many I did. That dude's fucking done twice as many because he's constantly flying out, new site, new franchisee, new grand opening. And it's like, whew, you're on the road when you start getting to scale with this. And even if you had just 15 to 20 locations and you're now in multiple different states, it's a lot of management. How do you foresee that in the future? Is that going to be something that you're going to hold? Are you going to put someone who's on the road doing more of the regional level, dropping in at some of these locations? How have you thought about that growth trajectory that you will likely have here in the future?
I hope you guys are enjoying the conversation with Steven. If this is sparking your interest and you want to learn more about franchising and Industrious, go to the show notes. There's a link there or to the link in my bio. Fill in your information and I will get you connected to the Industrious franchise crew personally. All right, back to the podcast.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to do it for the first while because I want to do it. You know, it is a lot. I can already feel it. You know, I was just in Texas. I flew into Texas late Sunday night, worked my ass off on Monday and Tuesday, went to the airport Tuesday night, got back here on Wednesday, and I was closing this gym on Thursday. As a matter of fact, I was here by the noon class on Wednesday working it, you know, so you're just, and then I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm going to be going. And so, you know, where I'm going to go, it's got to be someplace that's easy to get to. So Dallas is an example, and Seattle, Alaska's based in Seattle, Americans based in Dallas. I can get on a plane on the hour if I want to, and I can get there in 3 or 4 hours. And, so I think that early on, I think that I'm going to be really picky about that market, you know, too, because, you know, I can't spend 12 hours in airports and connections and stuff like that. I got to be able to get on a plane and get there in a few hours because.
So nobody from Atlanta, Georgia apply is essentially what we're saying, right? Yeah.
Need direct flights.
Direct flights.
It is on my mind that, you know, I'm going to need somebody early on to get them going. I like to be there because there's some instincts and, you know, every place is a little different and, you know, I'm not a control freak, but I do like to be there in working with the franchisee in learning from them and just doing work with them, being on their floor with them, even during the construction phase, because I've found that it's an unbelievable time to bond with that individual. And you know, if anything else, you know, yeah, it's more work for me, and it's certainly more work than I should be doing. You know, I'm not a construction worker by trade, but I end up in construction worker clothes a lot. And I know that that's probably not sustainable, but at this stage, you know, I'm able to really, really bond and connect with the people that are carrying the flag. And that's important to me. But I got to bring on help in that regard. And I'll do it when I feel like that person can deliver just like I can.
How much burden do you still have with the corporately owned stores?
I wouldn't say it's much at all. It goes back to, you know, when the leader of the culture is not there, the culture can get passed down. And then, you know, the next leader that comes in behind it, they've got their own ways. And then, you know, what can happen is over time, the culture on your floors the gyms that you own, they can change. And, you know, so I like to be on our floors, you know, as much as possible, sort of setting the tone in holding that culture and not letting it get away from us. And, I found that, you know, even if you've got the best people, that are running your gyms for you, things change if you're not there. So, you know, I think that it's important for me to be on that floor, you know, a couple of days a week, you know, doing meaningful work, working real shifts, you know, not 5 a.m. to midnight. You know, that's not what I'm talking about, but you know, being on the floor during your prime time a couple of days a week, whether it's a morning prime time or evening prime time. And that's sort of where I found the balance is, you know, twice a week, get me on that floor, give me the microphone. Let me teach the customers. Let me teach the new coach. Let me teach the manager. Let me teach, teach, teach. And let me bring the energy, that, you know, I love to bring.
And there was a guy in from out of town recently. We went and got dinner, former client owns a gym. And we were talking about you. And I was like, the one thing I think Steven's got to have, it's very interesting because these handful of franchisees are like really good employees of his. He's had to get real good of next man up. Cause you're essentially gutting your corporate employee staff to create the frame, you know, for these first, you know, tier of franchisees. And that is, he made a mention. He's like, man, it sounds like that's tough to constantly find people. I'm like, it is, but when a potential candidate, like an employee, someone who's going to be a coach or an assistant GM or GM can see that upward trajectory. Oh, I'm getting this position because the GM formally went and opened up their own thing. Do you know how much recruitment equity that gets you in today's fitness marketplace where it's the biggest issue I have? Like if I could come up with a headhunting service that was efficient for the fitness industry, it is so hard to find good help out there right now. And a lot of it's because, and no offense to anyone listening to this, but where the fuck is the future at your gym? Right. I mean, truly, like what, can you show me an upward trajectory beyond GM?
Right.
What does that look like? They're not gonna be, you're the owner, right? Where is that upward trajectory? But with Industrious, with this model, look at this. We have proof that you can now become your own business owner in a thing you understand you are an SME at. And I'm curious as to how that has helped you in recruiting new employees to replace the new franchisees.
There is no doubt that it's helped. The amount of when we post that we're hiring, there's too many. There's too many to interview. And
so many people fucking hate you, by the way. So many people fucking hate you right now. They just heard that. Like, I know I can't even tell you the amount of gyms that are like, I would just kill for someone that is not completely stupid to just apply for my gig.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are just swimming in them. Scrooge McDuck in his pool of resumes.
Yeah. And we played with this stuff intentionally, you know, where we've brought in people with very low experience, very, you know, next to no experience. We've brought in people that are from other gyms that have a lot of experience. We've brought in, our own members as coaches, you know, sort of followed that pattern. We've learned a lot about that. And so now we sort of know exactly what we're looking for in terms of what does that team member look like? And we know what questions to ask them and we can really hone in on it now. But you're right. When we started franchising and we're losing key players because they're going to be opening up their own gyms, it's like, oh shit, we've got two gyms and Industrious has more classes than any gym in the country. Somebody should fact check it, but I'd be willing to bet. And so it's like, how do we cover the schedule? And so it's like, okay, you know, we just got to get so we had a bunch of green coaches on the floor and that was hard. You know, the thing about green coaches is that they get good over time. And so that's been, you know, awesome. But what makes people work is something to work for. And, if that's not in place, you can promise all you want. You can pay all you want. You can beg all you want. But the reality is you're going to lose those people. And, fortunately, we've now created this. And this has always been on my mind because you're always thinking, especially when you expose yourself and you go to two locations, because now you can't be two places at once. You know, that's, you have to start actively solving for this stuff in your head on, okay, you know, I'm exposed here. And what do we need to create in order for people to stay with our company? You need to create opportunities and opportunities for growth and entrepreneurship and you need to make it fun and you need to make it, an awesome place to work that lifts people up. And now we have sort of this environment where there's something to work for. And, you know, it's what's even cooler now is because we have so many, you know, franchisees now, you know, rather than us hire, you know, posting and hiring, you know, people that just want to work for Industrious, we have franchisees that are, you know, when they sign their LOI and they get into lease, you know, the clock is ticking now and they got to be ready to go in 8 months. Let's say it's 3 months for permit, planning and permitting, loans, stuff like that, 3 months of construction, you know, so we'll call it 6 months, but normally it's 8 to 12. They got to be ready. And so now our new hires are not new hires. Our new hires are actually franchisees that are, you know, current customers that have bought a franchise. And they're coming into it. And, you know, now our employees are the franchisees themselves going through training. And, you know, they work really, really hard and they work really, really good, of course, because they're going to own one of these things. And so the quality that we're getting on the floor from that is really awesome. And, you know, granted that's temporary and it's passed through because they're going to leave and they're going to go open up their own. But, you know, we have this ecosystem and this healthy flow through. And you bring up a good point, because I believe that organizations in talent and getting it and keeping it, you know, it is a next guy up situation all the time. And, you know, this stuff is traceable to any successful athletic team, you know, or program that is just a winner and a winner and a winner. People got to compete. And you know, it's really important to us is that when you show up for work, you know, you recognize the fact that this isn't just a gym that you work for that's small and not going anywhere. Recognize this is an exciting company that you work for, and you're in the early stages of a very exciting thing. Don't fuck it up. And, you know, embrace this. It's special. And so, you know, the ones that are all in on that, you know, those are the people that we want to rally behind and rally with. And then the ones that aren't all in on that, that's okay too. You know, we've got work to do and they've got work to do and we're okay.
You guys have a period of time from the time the franchise agreement is signed to when you want them either with a lease in hand or with a grand opening? Is there like a window of time you're putting on so you don't get someone who gets a franchise, pays for the franchise, and then sits for too long?
Yeah. So, you know, initially it was 12 months. You got 12 months to open.
Okay.
I know that that's just too aggressive. It's not feasible.
Are you talking to grand opening?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. From like signing the franchise agreement to opening 12 months. I mean, I just know that in 12 months, we're going to have to be doing some sort of renegotiation with the franchisee, and I don't want to do that. So what we're giving them is 24 months to get open. And okay, That's a longer timeline. I don't necessarily like that, but, you know,
I say industry standard, that is extremely generous at industry standard.
It is. And now we're probably going to have to shrink that, you know, sort of each year, just like we're going to have to raise our prices each year. The reason that we're doing it right now is I don't want to put anybody against a gun or a smoking gun and say, you got to sign a lease and get open if it's not the right one. We need them to get open. They have to get open. You know, I don't want them to move so quickly that they start making bad decisions.
Correct.
And, you know, because I want them to feel good and I want them to be set up for success and I want everybody to win.
Yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of like putting the timeline on the grand opening is tough because there's so much of the construction element that's out of the realm, you know, and then maybe it's even like you just move the field goal post to, okay, we're going to give you a tighter window when it's for having a lease signed. Because right, that you're not, again, you can't make a building appear, right? I have to tell that to clients all the time. Like, I can't make property show up that's not here. But at least then again, it does keep people to a schedule. And also too, as you guys continue doing this, every rep you get, you'll get faster and more efficient. And the way you do it will just get refined and refined and refined. And then you'll hit like an optimal, nice, you know, let's not call it fast because fast gets sloppy, but smooth, right? A nice like crisp kind of pace to the whole thing. Hit me with an emerging franchise, what are some of the things that, what was harder than you thought it would be? And what was easier than you thought it would be?
Oh boy. I'd say what was harder than I thought it would be was getting the first franchise open. You know, it's I thought that, you know, cause I've got reps, you know, I've opened up two gyms myself. I know what it's like. You know, I know what construction's like, I know what leasing is like, I know what financing is like, I know what installation is like, I know what pre-sales are like. And so I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be easy. You know, I've got reps, but you know, it was hard. And it was
what
hard.
What was the, like, talk to me, give me deeper. Like what was harder about this?
Well, I think that it was multi-layered. So the first franchisee was our gym manager in South Lake Union, which is a high powered gym. And so we had to replace him. And while he was under construction, and then, you know, a big aspect of that construction scope, we decided to take on ourselves. And so I wanted to help him do that. And so, you know, we took on a lot of the painting, we took on a lot of the things that were overages that, you know, as we were starting to rip the building apart and getting into the, you know, all the stuff that's in buildings, you know, we took on a lot of the work just to kind of keep the cost burden down for him. And so that it was a lot of hands-on construction labor, that was hard to manage and deal with, because at the same time, we were also selling more franchises. So I was up all the time. It was a lot of work. And that's why I think it was the hardest part, is because it wasn't necessarily the project. The project actually went pretty damn smooth. You know, we got the permit in late July and they're open now. So that's a 4 or 5 month build. It's not bad.
That's relatively quick. Example, you were very, I mean, this is not something you would be doing with every phrase. So this one, it also had an additional scope on it, because you were altruistically assisting this franchisee because of the relationship you had with him, correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I wouldn't go out and build another building and for somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then what's been easier than you thought, where it's like, fuck, this is gonna be tough. And it's like, this part of it's actually been relatively pain-free.
Yeah. Just the, I think the sales process in general, you know, there was a lot to learn, and, you know, there was probably sales that could have been made, and franchisees that we could have brought on earlier, but, you know, we didn't get those deals done because I think of our inexperience at that time. And that's unfortunate, but you learn from those and then you get better. And, you know, now, you know, sort of, we understand how to take somebody in and how to vet them out now really, really efficiently, and work them through the process and the timeline and what it looks like, and create a path for them to that's real, and get them on board and get them signed, and off we go. And so,
what was the miss for you in the beginning on the sales side? Like, what was it? It was like, we couldn't provide enough. A lot of times, again, you're selling them a concept, but besides being there at the flagship, right, you got to create a lot of visualization on that call, right? You kind of really, what were the objections, or what was it exactly about the sales process you guys didn't have dialed in at that point?
Yeah, I think it was just, we hadn't sold one yet. And so it was, you know, you don't have that confidence, you know, quite yet, you know, because you're trying to sell your brand to somebody that you know, wants to join the team, and when you're trying to do it and you haven't had any experience or any reps, you know, you stumble on what is the best and the most exciting part about running one of these gyms, and you know, it's again, you, because you haven't opened up other franchises yet, and you know, you know, it's just harder to you know, sort of convince people that no, we are way better than what you're shopping for. Like, one of the leads that came in was really cool. He was debating on us or F45. He went with F45 just because of brand recognition. I'm sad that he did that. I think he made a terrible mistake.
I think he made a horrible fucking mistake.
But you know, I understand why he did it. You know, I probably could have articulated our brand first. And you know, you're just learning, right? You're so good at selling memberships at that point to your gym But then selling your brand, selling your operation, selling your business, you know, you need to get reps at that, just like anything.
How has the real estate side for you guys been? I mean, again, you got the advantage of knowing the market of Seattle and Washington and there and Bellevue and all that. How was that? Was that easier? And then as you, again, I know your Texas one, obviously you didn't have to worry about real estate, right? Yeah. Corey Dean, right down there, he had his building already ready to go. Yeah. Talk to me on that side, because that's a tough thing, especially we were talking about this offline. Like when you really do get specific, like, I know where I want to be, I know what I need to be in. I know the more specific I get, the higher likelihood you have success, but you are also taking more things off the board, right? Off, you know, to jump into. Which is a good thing, in my opinion. I'd rather have a really lean, you know, these are the prospective sites that are on market right now versus here's a bunch of them. And let's see if we can make it work. And that, can we make it work? Like the second I hear that, can I make it work? I'm always like, if it's not a fuck yes, it's a fuck no. This is too much money and too big of a risk of someone's livelihood to be like, yeah, that's not exactly what I think would work, but it's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of what's available. We want to get going faster. So let's go for that.
Yeah, no, you are so right. Real estate is the linchpin of this entire thing. And it's the moment you get into real estate, that's where the waters get real, real murky. Because everything ties back to it. Generally, you know, people are going to be, you know, pulling out an SBA loan to open up one of our gyms, unless they're super experienced and they have super deep pockets, you know, then it's going to tie back to the loan. And what ties back to the loan? The lease ties back to the loan. The loan's not going to fund unless the lease covers the length of the loan, right? Oftentimes there's use of funds for construction purposes. So now the construction scope needs to be there. So, you know, you need architects to draw these things and contractors to bid these things. And the moment you get into real estate, that's where things get really, really just tricky and murky. And so real estate is hard, and even when they're available, it's hard because of the everything is tied to the real estate, you know, your floor plan, everything. And so, and the location, and making sure that you're going to crush it in pre-sales, and making sure that you know, you're going to be sustainable, you're always going to have enough people walking through the front door. Like, it's tricky. And so real estate is the linchpin in the whole thing. And and what we found is once people get signed on with us, you know, it takes time, you know, it takes time, and they just need to work through a couple of, and just like I was describing, you know, we lost sales in early on because we didn't have experience. Franchisees, you know, sometimes they just got to, you know, make a couple of mistakes and lose a couple of deals so that way they can just learn the process and then hopefully land on the one that is just right for them and the landlord. Because I view the real estate, it's got to work both ways. It's got to be great for us, and it's got to be great for the landlord.
It does. And it's, you know, it's hard. This is, you know, one of my biggest gripes with the commercial real estate broker industry is that on the gym real estate side, recently got a client, and he had a broker who was aggressively pushing him to go for this site. It was a bigger commission check for the broker. It was not, I mean, like, it was clearly not a good site. Like, when you really broke it down by the numbers, or even the location and the demographic and the site suitability, even the op cap, it didn't make any sense. But this broker, he's got, you know, he's kind of pressuring this. Most of us don't have a ton of experience leasing a building the first time we lease a building. And even the second time you've done it, you've only done it twice now. So it's like, you can find yourself getting manipulated and taken advantage of in these scenarios by the guy who's like, oh, no, listen, I think this spot is definitely going to be better. It's going to be $48 a square foot, but they're giving you $50,000 of TI. And I'm like, that's going to cover the bathrooms and the ADA water fountain. And that's it. Like, that's not worth us fucking ourselves for on a 10-year lease term for this deal. This guy's just trying to get paid. A question on that, on the real estate side, for your guys, when they're, because you had something like, I love that Salt Lake location, that old, like, I mean, it was a tire store, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The South Lake Union location.
Yeah. I love that when you're in there, like, because it was there, and then you could see, like, you could see the other tire store, like, you'd tell what it was. And it's like, it just, like, such a great repurposed building. Are you guys getting more narrowed in on what that square rectangle looks like for you?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Well, what's really cool in Seattle, and because all markets are different, is, you know, because of our use, we're obviously, we're a gym. So normally that's assembly class, right? Yes. And so you trigger things when you go after these old relic buildings, like substantial alterations and seismic, we're in the Northwest, and fire sprinklers, and, you know, you trigger these things. If you go over 50 occupant load, you know, then you're going to trigger big stuff in big buildings, and it's going to be, you're going to be rebuilding the thing. And, you know, that's what happened in South Lake Union as an example, but because we show halos on the plans, we can stay under a 50 occupant load, at least in the city of Seattle. And that's been huge.
Because you're telling me you've been able to get the local municipality to look at your in-place model, understand the occupancy you'll run per, and even though there's a general classification of like gym or indoor recreation or fitness or whatever, but because of this, you're able to get kind of like a conditional check. Like, okay, we typically, because of gym, we know what the volume of a health club is, what they're thinking of essentially. That dude is, that's incredible. If I were you, whoever the individuals in those municipalities are, if like getting them to write like a statement as to the justification of why you got that condition, because you're going to need a precedent to take into other municipalities, because you're likely going to hit something similar.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And you know, we have certainly the meeting minutes, and it's, so that's super helpful.
That's cool.
So yeah, now that we've figured that out, we can go into old relic buildings. Before, I would walk in and be like, don't do it. There's no way, because unless the landlord is going to say, I will deliver this with a CFO, this building to you on this date, and it's going to be A3 occupancy, and you're going to be able to go, put in your gear and go, then you cannot, and they're going to pay for it, you cannot do this deal, because you're going to open up Pandora's box. You're going to hit every substantial alteration trigger. And before you even get to the things that actually add value for your customers, like nice bathrooms and showers, you're going to spend $750,000 on stuff that's all behind walls. But now we can get into these old relics, and we can get just our bathroom set in without having to rebuild the entire building. And so it makes it way more feasible, because there's a lot of old teardowns that are still going to get probably torn down in 10 years, but we'll lease them for 10 years in the process. And hopefully along the journey, the franchisee will hopefully be able to just buy the building themselves, which is what I want them to do. Because they should. I mean, why not? Well, who would pass up that?
If they have the opportunity. Talk to me again. One of the things you and me talked about when I was out there in Seattle, we talked about, you know, the halo cost equipment wise, you know, something you guys over time are going to work to try to package that up with different outfitters, manufacturers, try to see what you can do to, because that becomes a decent part of it's the beauty of the model, but it's also it's a heavy item on your CapEx, right? So how has that worked as far as that goes? I mean, are you guys still pretty much still status quo as where it was? Have you been able to lean out that cost? What does that look like?
It's status quo to how it was. So we're still with Rogue, and we're doing everything through Rogue and Assault Fitness. We need to start making moves there, because, you know, that's, again, if we can get it done, and it's unbelievable, it's important to us that our gear is nice. We want people to look at it and be like, that shit's rad. Like, they've got the best stuff. If it can be done for $100,000, I want to do it for $100,000, and especially if the stuff could potentially be more durable. So the stuff that's rubber, it lasts for, depending on what it is, you know, it lasts for 3 to 4 years. The stuff that's steel lasts for the duration. And the Concept 2 stuff, just it stuff is like the Energizer Bunny. It just goes and goes and goes. So do the Assault Runners. And in terms of you know, who we're sourcing the gear from, it's still coming through Rogue. But we're starting to get Rogue's attention, which is nice.
Before they just treated you like any online per buyer, right? There's like, oh, fuck you, go whatever. But now you're starting to order packages, big quantities. To my knowledge, do they do unit-based sale? Like do you have to satisfy a certain amount of annual sales with them to get any kind of discount? I don't know if they do anything like that.
They don't. Okay. I think that there's, they've probably never worked with a company like Industrious. I think that what they crush it at is, you know, garage gyms. They crush it at, CrossFit affiliates. And, you know, I think where they really make a ton of money is in like the legit D1, you know, training facilities. Those are probably their big orders. And so, but, you know, what's interesting about us is we have the halo, and we can make the halo cooler, and we can make the halo better, and getting somebody, because I've got ideas, right? I want something that we can do hip extensions with or GHD sit-ups with, and I want it to attach, and I want it to be here. I want cable stuff here. I want, you know, we can get plexi in these things, and you know, we can still do some inversion stuff that people enjoy, but isn't stupid and crazy and risky, right? Like we can do really, really cool stuff. And I want customization. And I think that it could be a really fascinating opportunity for an equipment manufacturer out there if they've got the stuff that they could actually deliver on our orders and send, you know.
Have you seen any of the content I created when Metabolic partnered with Beaver Fit to custom create those new racks?
No. Uh-uh. Oh, but yeah, I did. Yeah.
So I got, I spoke at the Beaver or at the Metabolic conference again this past year, and Beaver Fit spoke there as well. And I got to spend a good amount of time with those guys talking about it. Like, those are the guys, they are so willing to get inventive and creative in what they're doing that, I mean, with Metabolic, they came up with that concept of the rack, which is now saving the average Metabolic franchisee 500 square feet. And in their 25 to 3,000 square foot model, holy shit, that's a lot. That's a lot.
That is significant.
But like with yours, I was thinking when I was talking with Mike over there at Beaverfit, I was like, God, man, for Industrious, if we could have the squat rack, but then built into the side, this dumbbell storage or plate storage, like if you didn't have to worry about the traveling of people going to get their plates and shit and the dumbbells, you'd chew back a bunch of land, a bunch of square footage.
Yep. So, and a way cooler experience.
Way cooler. I mean, it looks so fucking sexy. I'll show you some pictures here when I get done. But I'll do an intro with you and Mike and CJ over at Beaverfit. Those guys they think outside the box, and they're military guys. They're like, fuck it, let's try whatever. Like, they're very, very cool dudes. That would be something interesting to see if you guys were able to come up with something that is proprietary and again, a little bit more unique, because every halo looks like a 169 square foot garage.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so if you could go and then transcend, which looks unique in and of itself with Halo, but transcend that a little bit, like a rig that has an extension out for like the store or whatever however you come up with something. But we'll definitely talk after this on those guys. Steve, man, as your friend, I'm super proud of you, man. I've seen the guys that do the franchise thing huge and big but to see like where you started with it and being able to follow along on the journey and all that, dude, I'm super proud of you. I cannot wait till you have one of these in Charlotte. So pumped one day to hopefully see one of these in Charlotte. Where does the core, real quick before I'll let you go, I want to respect your time, but think of the corporate team. How do you think of the growth of that? Like, how many people are now on the franchise? Do you have anyone who's solely franchise only, or are they dual role in your corporately owned stores in Seattle and moonlighting with the franchise?
Yep. Everybody's dual role right now. You know, we're still a small enough company where it's, we're so fast growing. So we define roles, and then the role's different 5 weeks later, it feels like. So, you know, we're in that phase as a business, and I think it's exciting. You know, for people that are on our team, you know, their scope, it needs to spill out into our corp company on stores, but then they need to be supporting franchisees too. And, you know, I think that it's exciting because, you know, we've got team members that are just coaches that are like, I want to help, you know, sell franchises. And then other people are like, I want to help get them open. I want to travel. I want to train the team. I want to do, you know, our virtual learning. So, you know, that everybody's sort of kind of getting their own little pet projects out of this, and it's fun. And I think that, you know, it's really cool for me to see and not interfere with and just sort of let it go. Because I'm learning a lot about our team, and I'm learning about, you know, the work that they're strong at and the work that they don't like doing. And I'm a big believer in allowing people to sort of play to their strengths, and watch the magic that happens when you put them in those positions where, you know, they can really leverage the things that, that they're good at. And I found that, you know, when people are playing to their strengths, they can do better work more efficiently, and it's more enjoyable for them, and it's more impactful and cost effective for the business. And so everybody's in this coach the floor, have fun. The fun stuff's all on the floor.
Sure. Like
that,
yeah.
When we're all doing our projects and shit, and we're, you know, cranking away and getting frustrated and trying to solve problems, you know, we get all that stuff behind us. Then we go hit the floor for the afternoon or the evening. And that's when the fun starts. It's just like the parties. It's like a party every night. And we just love it.
For anyone who's listening, if you're a CrossFit gym or a group barbell strength and conditioning gym, I cannot advise you enough to consider checking out an Industrious franchise. And to, I'll tell you this, if I'm a CrossFit gym in Charlotte, North Carolina, I'd be fucking nervous if you came and moved in and you were my competition. I believe if someone wants to stay in this barbell group strength and conditioning thing, your model is by far a superior, absolute superior product. I'm talking taxi to Uber, that level of superior product. So from an experience and just the whole thing. So I'm pumped for you, man. I'm excited to see this thing continue to grow.
Thanks, Stu.
Where can, if anyone's going to get in contact with you, where can we send them?
workhardlivefit.com/franchise.
Bingo. Alrighty, guys, that is it. Steven, as always, bud, always good jamming with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.